But first, as you intro'd her, Mary Beth Quirk, online consumer editor at Consumer Reports, she joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Mary Beth.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, we would think digital technology would help protect consumers from fraud and scammers, but according to a new article in your magazine, there are new digital threats every day. So I had an aha moment when reading about the first scam in the article, smishing and spoofing. We've all experienced this with our cell phones. You get a phone call, and the phone number is a familiar area code and prefix, but it's not a number you know, but you think, oh, I'm going to answer it anyway. It has to be somebody in my neighborhood, but often it's not.
Correct. Sometimes it's people will do this, scammers will do this just to tempt you into picking it up, because if you're like me, you know, I don't usually pick up calls from numbers I don't know, but they can even use, once in a while, they can make it look like it is a totally different phone number. It could be like somebody's, you know, your friend's phone number, a bank. It looks like a financial institution. So you're more likely to pick up something that you recognize.
And once I pick up the phone in a situation like that, what's my risk? What bad thing could happen?
Well, they can do this, and they can just pretend that they're from some kind of, again, like an insurance company or a bank or a creditor, and they might get, you might be kind of caught off guard, and they're asking you for some personal information or your credit card number, and you might just spit that out, because your instinct when you're talking to somebody legitimate in that kind of field is to give them that information. So you definitely should not be answering calls from numbers you don't, if you're not totally sure who it is, and regardless, don't give out that information. Hang up, look up the number from, you know, who they say they're calling from, and then call them back and see if it's really legit.
Yeah, I thought an interesting point in the article, it said, you know, if it's a legitimate call, they'll leave a voicemail for you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And is there a way we can prevent getting these calls? There was the do not call list that we all heard about with our landlines. Is there one for cell phones as well?
And I mean, it's, people will just get around it. You can block that number so that it can't call you. Again, you can block that from your phone. But it's really just screening your calls and not picking it up. And again, if it's something important, they will leave a message. They will find you.
And, you know, it's interesting. The Do Not Call list is a remarkably ineffective government program, as best I can tell, because I know all of us for years have put numbers on there, and it may have reduced the volume, but it doesn't seem to work very well. Why do you think that is?
I'm not exactly sure. I think people just can get around it. They're buying lists from other places, and your phone number can just end up on those lists. Now, since we don't have landlines, you can forward any of these phone numbers over to your carrier and let them know, you know, that this is something that's happening and you don't want that phone call. So it's really kind of up to you and your individual carrier to figure that out right now.
I really liked a piece of advice under this category where the writer said, don't give your phone number out so freely and readily.
Yeah.
And
it's identifying information about you. It's linked to your name. You know, the more you put it out there, the more likely it is that somebody can use it against you.
And so often now, when you're just at a brick-and-mortar store and they say, may I have your phone number so, you know, we can look up your account and we can send you discounts or something, I have no problem now saying, no, I don't want to give you my phone number.
Yeah, and you can always ask. Whenever somebody's giving, you know, asking for that, you say, well, why do you need it? What will it be used for? At least that way you have a little bit more information.
So let's talk about what the term smishing means, because I really like it. But where does
funny,
it come
right?
from?
Yeah, it comes from, so, you know, we just call it texting, but SMS is really what texts are, short message service. Mm-hmm. So they use smishing, SMS, and it's kind of like spoofing, where you get a fake text message saying, well, it's a real text message, but it's not from who it says it is. Maybe saying like, oh, there's a problem with your bank account, or like, click here to take a survey and get a gift card. And that is, you know, it might seem okay to do, but you should not ever respond to any of those. Don't ever click on any links. Don't even respond yes or no, because then they know it's a viable phone number. They're just kind of throwing this stuff out there and seeing, you know, where it sticks. So don't respond to that kind of message.
And that leads to an interesting question, which I've been told in the past that on the email side, when you get mm-hmm. junk email, the instinct that you have to hit the unsubscribe button is actually often a bad idea, as opposed to just hitting a block button. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and that's the practice known as phishing, which is also, I should say, smishing comes from phishing, where they just use an email to try to trick you into giving your personal information. So if you click on a link and, you know, if you don't know exactly where it's coming from, it could either download malware to your computer or your device that you're using. It could take you to another page that then, you know, can get your information. So just don't click on anything, because you don't know if that unsubscribe link, if it's coming from a scammy person, they probably don't have a real unsubscribe apparatus like set up. So you're just letting them know like, hi, I'm here and I'm ready to click on whatever you send me. So just ignore it, block it. You can forward it again to your email provider. A lot of them have places to report that kind of, to report phishing specifically. So
wait, I need I need some clarification on this, because I just went through on Friday in my inbox under, I think, promotions is the folder heading. And there were a bunch of things I was getting from what appeared to be legitimate retailers, and I just hit the unsubscribe. That's okay, isn't it?
If it's legitimately from the retailer, yes. If that's something, you know, where you can, if you hover over that unsubscribe, it should say kind of like where it's going. They might use a common, they might use a third-party company to generate, you know, these lists and everything. But if you are sure it's coming from the retailer. Also, sometimes I know in Google, they just have like a basic, it's outside of the email, but it can identify the email as a newsletter or something. And it will let you unsubscribe through Google. That should not, you know, pose any problems. But again, when you're not sure, just block it.
So let's move on to shimmer scams, which is kind of like skimming. We were all warned about these skimming devices that can go on ATMs, where it's an additional device that scammers will attach to like an ATM. Mm-hmm. And when you skim your card, it will read the information and steal it. So now all of our cards have these chips in them, and shimmers take the info from the chips now?
Yeah, the difference is with skimmers, they were able to take that information off your card and make a clone card. They could make a copy that they could just, you could go around and use like a regular debit or credit card. With the shimmer, they have a microchip that can read some of the information. They won't be able to clone your card exactly, but they can still get enough information to make purchases using your information. So they can't maybe use it as easily elsewhere, but they can definitely still use it. So
Do they produce a magstripe version of your chip card? Is that basically what they can do?
No, they can't clone it. So they just can get the information, maybe make like online purchases elsewhere, but they can't have a physical. They can't make a physical card.
And what do you look for a shimmer scam? What does that look like?
Well, first you want to be, if you're using an ATM, it's always really the best idea is to use one that's installed at a bank. You know, if you're at Chase, if you're at Citibank, use their ATMs. The standalone machines, when they're outside of, you know, a deli or something, anybody can kind of walk up and fidget with that. So if you are using one of those, if you feel like your card's hitting something when you put it in, that could mean that something is in there. So you want to just, if you feel that, don't put in your PIN, don't do anything else, just walk away and go to another ATM at a bank.
Yeah,
and if you feel like this has happened, you should definitely let your bank know, hey, I think my card got shimmed.
An interesting fact from the article, when it comes to falling for scams, it's ironically enough millennials, not seniors, who are the most vulnerable. And among those who reported losing money to fraud, those in their 20s accounted for 40% versus 18% for those 70 and older. That's according to 2017 Federal Trade Commission data. So why are these millennials falling for these frauds? What makes someone vulnerable?
I mean, I think part of it is just that they're the most connected to their devices. They're out there. They're seeing more. They're exposed to more than perhaps, you know, somebody who's a senior. They're not using email as much. They're maybe not using text messages. So I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for all millennials, but I think that maybe they think, oh, you know, I'm safe. I know so much about the internet. But they have less money to lose, but they're losing it more often. So it kind of shakes out.
And then Facebook, there are some scams on Facebook that you call like farming. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, you like to see good, warm-hearted posts that make you feel fuzzy inside, and they'll often ask you, you know, like this, share this. And it seems pretty innocent just to say, you know, oh, yeah, I like this young girl on her birthday, you know, who's trying to recover from a terrible disease. But before you do that, if you don't know the person, you know, you're giving your information, even just by saying you like something, you're giving that much information out. And they can sometimes go back and switch any kind of links or things that are connected to the post to something that's bad. It's like a bogus page or something selling something, you know, a scammy product. So they can go back and change that. And then if you go back and click on that, you can, they can get information about you. But even if you're just, you know, all those things where it's like, what's your such and such name? Use the first name of your first pet and the middle name is your street. All that kind of information is what people can use later to go and pretend they're you. You don't want to give out any kind of private identifying information like the name of your pet or your mother's maiden name. But people will just enter that on a post and they don't know this person or this company, and they're just freely giving up, you know, personal information. So
that's interesting. If I click on the like button for, you know, the young kid with the who's a, the cancer victim who says he wants to have a million likes. If I click on the like, obviously people are forwarding those. You click on the like button, what they can do is they can access at least your public profile. Is that what the concern is?
Yeah, they can at least see your name, and if it, they can really get down to the nitty-gritty and say, okay, this person is likely to click on these kind of posts, so then how can I target them in the future with something different that could be more nefarious? So it just shows, again, that you're out there willing to click on things. So you just really want to think about stuff before you like. It might feel good, but just take your finger off the button, not the mouse. You don't have to.
And Mary Beth, it drives me nuts when I see my friends on Facebook and they fill out those surveys that says find out which character you are on Game of Thrones, and they're like, hey, I'm the Snow Queen or whatever. I'm sorry, I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I want to say to my friends, don't you know these are ways people get information about you? I mean, what percentage of those are legitimate, what do you think?
I wouldn't be able to speak to a percentage, but I think that there's enough out there. Some of them are, sure, they're just harmless, whatever, but I think as things are showing us lately, you know, your information, you don't have much control of it once it's out there, so you should really just be stingy about what you're giving away. I mean, is it really worth it to get which character you are on a TV show for that second, you know, of gratification? I don't think it is. So I think we should just be more stingy, because it might seem innocent just saying you like something, but that can say a lot about you.
Well, then we have these online charity scams where somebody puts up a GoFundMe page and they need help paying for medical bills. It's largely unregulated, and this is really a buyer beware scenario, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I will not give money to somebody unless I know them personally. Unless I've looked up outside of that crowdfunding page, you want to go look up all of their details. If they don't have a physical address for their charity, if they don't have all the right kinds of disclaimers, you just should not be giving money to strangers unless you're absolutely sure it's a legitimate thing.
And I
take
it they'll
pull out your heartstrings.
And I take it there have been actually documented instances of people putting up totally fraudulent GoFundMe pages.
Oh yeah, people are pretending to die of cancer. You know, they're pretending that their house got tears. You know, destroyed in a tornado or something, but people can lift photos from anywhere on the internet. I'm sure you've seen. You can Google image anything, and you could find a picture of something. So they could take a legitimate photo of somebody who is dying of cancer, and then just pretend that that's them. And that's another thing you want to do is just if the photos look fake, if they look like they're coming from somewhere else, if there's not a lot of information about where this money is going, just stay away.
And that's when they can be legitimately prosecuted for fraud, right, Roger? You're a lawyer. So you say, I'm dying of cancer, and you're not dying of cancer. But if you said, I have medical bills and I have some health issues, maybe the person does, but maybe they don't want to use their own money and they put that out there. I mean, in that case, they're not really lying, right? It's not misrepresentation.
Right. Yeah, it might not be the same, you know, as just running a scam charity, but it's really, do you want to, it depends on what you want to give. If you think that this person really does need help with their medical bills, or again, if you know them personally, then it's just fine. But if you don't, you should really just know where your money's going.
And then when tech support wants to help you, mm-hmm. when your computer screen locks up and this message pops up and says, hi, this is tech support, your computer needs help, either call us or click here. That's a big beware, isn't it?
That's a big red flag. I mean, somebody just popping in to tell you that, first of all, something is wrong, and that, second of all, they're going to help you for money, that won't happen. You need to talk to the person. You know, if you've got a Mac, you call Mac. If you've got a Microsoft, you know, phone or device, you call them. Don't ever click on a pop-up that says, we're going to help you, you know, go through a diagnostic test. They could install malware if you click on something. Or, you know, if you end up calling somebody and they'll walk you through a fake repair that you don't need and then charge you money that you should not be having to pay. That's not fun.
And
but don't trust anybody.
But that's different from ransomware, which the FTC says is one of the most serious online threats facing people and businesses today. When you actually click on a phony link or open an email that appears to be from someone you know, and then bam, mm-hmm. malware encrypts your files and you can't access them anymore.
Yep. It's basically kidnapping your files and holding it for ransom.
This actually happened to the station a couple years ago.
And, oh, no.
And we survived. Mm-hmm. We learned the importance of backing up.
Yes, it is very, very important. You always want to back up. You always want to have the latest versions of your operating system, any kind of web browser software. You should try blocking pop-ups so that you won't even get a pop-up saying, click here. Yeah, you just want to double check anything that you're clicking on, anything you're downloading. Again, you can hover your mouse over a link, and if it looks like it's going somewhere suspicious, just don't click on it.
I know we've seen ransomware targeting businesses. Is it also something we actually see targeting individuals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't think of a specific example right now, but I definitely have heard stories before where, I mean, this isn't just about getting some big movie studios, information. This could just be, we're going to make it so you can't access your files and you have to pay us to get that access back. And that's really scary because people keep a lot of stuff. You have your photos, your financial information, you know, things you've written. You've got your whole life on your computer sometimes. So people are going to be willing to pay to get that information back.
So it's not just the Russians going after John Podesta. This is something we actually see in real business circumstances.
Yes.
And we understand Nexus IT folks were on Cool Science Radio recently. And when ransomware hits a business, the ransom is often in bitcoins. And they said they want usually from half a bitcoin up to 2 bitcoins. And at the time, I think bitcoins are going for 9,000 or something. And a company, depending on the quality of data that they lost, in order to get that back, they might be willing to pay $4,500 or $9,000. But then often, they don't get their information back.
Right, there's no guarantee. You're already dealing with somebody who's trying to get money out of you.
They're not.
You can't really trust that they're going to do what they say. So,
then, Mary Beth, if that happens, what do you do? You call the police? You call National Security Administration? Your Attorney General's office? How do you know who you reach out to?
You always want to. It's a good idea to think local, so you can call your call the police. You want to report. You know, the FTC is always looking out for these kinds of things. They've got a whole web portal where you can complain about that, but that's not going to get you as much of an immediate action because that's just more for they're collecting all of the complaints from all over the country. So definitely want to start local. Call your local police department, your AG's office, anybody else that's got, your local municipality will often have, kind of places you can report consumer fraud. So you definitely want to do that. And, I mean, if your computer, if it's like ransomware, you can contact your service providers, the people who make your computer. But at that point, it's kind of too late. So you definitely want to let the police know so they can investigate.
We only have a couple minutes left. I wanted to hit on the white label ticket scams. You had some good advice about people who like to buy concert tickets online.
Yeah, you definitely want to try, first of all, to buy directly from the venue or whatever the license. Ticket reseller is. You just anything that looks, if it's unlicensed, if it's unregulated, if they've got a lot of fine print, make sure you're reading the fine print because people can just say, oh, I'm going to resell these tickets, and you might think you're paying for the face value, but then they'll tack on hundreds of dollars in fees. For example, we have in a magazine. So you definitely just don't want to buy it from just a website. People can just set up a website saying, hey, I've got a ticket selling site. But you want to just check on read every single bit of fine print. And again, if you're not sure, you can always call the venue and say, hey, where are the licensed places that are selling these tickets if they're, using a reseller.
And one of the things you had in the article, which is a little sidebar that I thought of as the oldies but goodies, which are scams that never seem to go away. And the one that I found the most interesting and the one that, I wanted to draw attention to was the IRS scam because I can't tell you how often I will get a phone call from an acquaintance that says, I've gotten this call from the IRS.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's scary. They will pretend, people will call and pretend that they're from the IRS and say, you've got to give me, all this information that they can then use to, get your money or file a tax refund actually and things on your part. They'll provide fake badge numbers, all that kind of stuff.
And quite often the script I've heard is one where they indicate that they're going to arrest you if you don't immediately make arrangements for a quick payment.
The IRS will not do that, really. The IRS will never call and say, we're going to come and arrest you.
I don't think the IRS uses phone calls for this kind of purpose at all.
They'll send you letters. If you've done something wrong, you can always call them, too. So if you get a phone call saying we're from the IRS, say, okay, let me hang up and call you back. What's the number? And then you call the real IRS. But for the most part, the IRS will send you documented, letters in the mail, certified mail, telling you what you've done wrong and what you have to pay. They're not going to call you and threaten you. That's for sure.
If you are just joining us, we're talking to Mary Beth Quirk, the online consumer editor at Consumer Reports. Mary Beth, we're a nonprofit radio station. Consumer Reports is nonprofit. I wanted to give you the last minute just to do your elevator pitch to our listeners about the importance of supporting Consumer Reports.
Oh, I mean, Consumer Reports, you know, everything we do is supported by science. We test things in our labs. We also have, you know, surveys that we send out to all of our subscribers and members. So people, we're really getting information from everyday people on how they use different products and services, the pain points that they have. So it's really powered by consumers. And again, yeah, we're a nonprofit, and we're doing everything just to keep everybody in the industry, keeping it honest is basically what we're trying to do. And, you know, it's the more choices consumers have, the better, and we just like to give them the information about all the different choices you have because you're spending your money somewhere. You want to make sure that you're really getting the benefit from it. So,
and you guys stay on top of things like the latest online frauds and scams. Mm-hmm. And the article that we're talking about is in the latest magazine. But people can also subscribe to you online?
Yes, we have a membership. We have online memberships. We've got print memberships. We've got a combination of both. So you can go to consumerreports.org for all that good stuff and more. We've got lots of tips and advice for, you know, everything you could face in the digital world today.
Great. Mary Beth Quirk, anything else you want to add?
No, that's it for me. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.